Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
It was 1989, my thoughts were short, my hair was long. Caught somewhere between a boy and man. Far from in between, it was summertime in northern Michigan.
In light of the recent calls for the city council to cancel its contract with Murray and Peter Present, the producer of A Drag Queen Christmas, I want to focus on the business side of drag and the significant financial impact it brings to the city of Pensacola and surrounding area. While the current show, A Drag Queen Christmas, is on track to sell out the theater's 1,641 seats, for a sake of conservative estimate tonight, let's assume it sells 90% capacity of the theater, about 1,475 tickets at the average ticket price of $75 based on the tickets that are currently advertised for sale. Based on those 1,475 seats sold, a gross ticket sales would be generated of $110,000, again, conservatively.
I always love it when somebody's promoting Drag Queen Christmas conservatively, but okay, fine. Stephen McCollum was one of the speakers at Thursday night's Pensacola City Council meeting, and after the initial push from the conservative churches who were against allowing Drag Queen Christmas to take place at the Sanger on December 23rd, then some of the other side came out, which, by the way, that's good, in my opinion. That's healthy. That means that we're hearing from both sides. You know, there weren't a lot of people getting up and really advocating for the thing. What instead the city attorney had basically said was, you know, there's nothing that you can do about this unless you want us to get sued on the First Amendment and also on the breach of contract. So, you know, we didn't have the representatives of the other side advocating for the performance itself. And, you know, part of a healthy democracy is that people on both sides present. And since this was never an agenda item because it was a contract with ASM Global and the, you know, the people who put on the show, it never came before city council as an approval item to begin with. And it was only an open forum discussion. So, yeah, but that's the whole point. You know, if something's not an agenda item, then you may not get both sides until the thing sort of persists over the course of two different meetings. And what I have to assume will probably be a third and a fourth meeting because November's coming and December's coming and then eventually the event is coming or not. You know, I mean, I suppose it's always possible it gets canceled. I think it's unlikely. But as Steve McCollum was pointing out, look, the economic impact of this show is pretty hefty. Just on ticket sales alone, somewhere in the $100,000+ range.
Total one night economic impact, conservatively, $225,000 to $260,000, with significant portions flowing directly into city revenue streams, wages, local workers, and tax collection.
Stop saying conservatively. of course, what he means is in making economic projections and, you know, making a range and on the low end of the optimism scale is what we call conservative. But still, feels like that's the wrong word for the situation. But anyway, and when you talk about adding all of the different ways that people who come to town for the show and don't live here to begin with might spend their money on dinners, on hotels, everything else, you know, a fairly significant thing. And then, of course, standard analysis economically is that you multiply that out because, you know, an extra dollar into the economy isn't just an extra dollar. It's an extra $2 or $3 when people, you know, you go here and spend and then they go here and spend and then they go here and spend. And I don't know why I'm mansplaining economics to you, but so, you know, they say somewhere upwards of $500,000 to $750,000 when you put it all together. Completely different perspective taken on by a guy who did not give his last name, named Matthew.
Born and raised in South Georgia, joined the Navy, was in for 10 years. And I want to talk about the impact of drag itself. So you guys got the numbers back there. This is a way for us to use our voice. And by canceling events like this and things that go along with that portion of people's lives, that's, you know, freedom of speech.
And that's the position that I had taken. That's the position that Adam Cobb, the city attorney, had taken, is that this is an expression, though it might seem vulgar to a lot of people, even the vast majority of people, blasphemous to people, myself included. It still is expression. It still is First Amendment expression. And to some of these people, it's an important expression. You say, how on earth could this be anything other than just plain offensive? Well, you know, it's a tour. This concert performance, whatever you want to call it, is a theatrical performance, is a tour. They go to lots of different cities. Ours just happened to be scheduled December 23rd. From our perspective, unfortunate. From their perspective, maybe they love it better because it's so close to Christmas. But, you know, just worth recognizing that to some people, this is actually a meaningful performance of something that they believe in or something that they celebrate. And you know what? Even if it's not meaningful, it's speech, it's expression, it's ridiculous, but also protected. That's kind of the idea. Again, another perspective on this, Eric Douglas, I don't know whether Eric is in the show or is just an advocate of the art form as he participates in it.
Some have said that drag mocks femininity, but I look at it another way. As a proud drag performer myself, drag isn't about mocking femininity. It's an art form that it celebrates it. It's a way of honoring creativity, self-expression, and the power of performance.
Now, I know it's hard to hear past his speech affect, but this is the idea. You know, several of the church members, when they presented, said that it's an offense to women. It's a degradation of womanhood. It's an attack on womanhood. I always thought that the people who were performing drag were really admiring womanhood and wish they could be women, at least temporarily. Now, it is an exaggeration, of course. It's a sort of, vaudeville or burlesque exaggeration of femininity. But, you know, the church folks say it's offensive to women. There's an article that had come out not that long ago, the idea being that, people who are truly pro-women should be against this, written from the left, because it's, my culture is not your costume kind of thing. You're appropriating women's, it's no different than somebody putting on blackface or somebody putting on, Native American face or somebody putting on woman face. It's all an exaggeration and it's all an insult, essentially, to the people who are the original holders of the cultural right, which in this case would be women. But Eric Douglas is saying it's not that, and it's also not anti-Christian. You guys don't understand what Christianity is all about.
The biggest mockery of Christ isn't this drag show. Any drag event or the LGBTQ+ community as a whole is blatantly shutting people out, justifying hate and discrimination. The God I serve preaches love, inclusion, and community.
It's a very interesting sort of criticism from the what you might call the gist of the Bible, as opposed, and some explicit pieces, not explicit in being adult theme, but explicit in being overtly stated. That the meaningful things in the Bible are about love and charity and kindness, not about judging people and excluding them or hating them. And, you see that theme running certainly throughout the New Testament. Even some elements of the Old Testament carry that same theme as well. It's a, maybe you disagree with what we're doing, but of course, God cares about all people. Okay, true. God also prefers not blasphemy. God prefers not to be mocked. God does separate the genders. And so, I'm not sure that Eric Douglas's theology is, I am sure that it's not great. But, there's also an aspect of this that is represented in the New Testament where Jesus doesn't go and hang out with the Pharisees. He does some, but mostly to make them look stupid. Jesus goes and hangs out with the sinners, and he actually got in trouble for that. And so what at least Eric is hinting at here in his defense of his own art form drag is that, Christians who come out against a drag show look a lot more like the Pharisees of the New Testament than they do like the Jesus of the New Testament. Even the disciples make some of these errors, but still, that's kind of the gist of what he's getting at. On the other hand, James C. Johnson, who is, he's on this station as an advertiser, as you hear his ministry minute every day at around 7:20. I've gotten to know Pastor Johnson pretty well over the last couple of weeks, had a really good conversation with him the other day. I think his presentation has adapted because of our conversation. He is still vehemently against this, and he was the only one really to show up to talk about that. I think he was the only one to talk about this on Thursday. Again, not an agenda item, and so it's a forum, where you can give your complaints and petition the city council with your redress for grievances.
Mr. Mayor, recently on news radio, you explained that because the city hired ASM Global as the operator of the Sanger, that you defer critiques, criticisms, and questions questions to them. Then you explain that individuals disappointed in Drag Queen Christmas are, quote, giving off a false presumption that the city has more authority than you actually do, end quote. So I just want to be clear, what authority does the city actually have?
And he thinks the city has plenty of legal, contractual, ordinance, and law-based authority to say no to this.
According to the management agreement between the city and ASM Global, on page 9, it clearly states that the city hereby reserves the right to review and approve the kind and quality of events. Drag Queen Christmas is an event that is being held at the Sanger. The city does have the right to approve or by inference disapprove of any event held at the Sanger. Respectfully, Mr. Mayor, it's disingenuous for you to say otherwise.
And one of the there's kind of two dimensions to this. One is wanting to prohibit the thing before it happens, which he believes, and Adam Cobb, the city attorney, disagrees, whether they have the legal authority to stop this beforehand now that they've entered into the contract. And the other is the possibility of after, if this does take place, having a conversation about what should be the standards for shows at the Sanger or, you know, any other public venue or, I mean, perhaps theoretically even private venues. By which I mean clubs and things like that, because, you know, a theater, because you have the Sanger on the one hand, but you have, you know, the Rex or some other private entity that's not city owned that, you know, you might have a different standard for. And the question there is, can you have the same thing there? Well, I mean, you know, you can't just have strip clubs without having them grandfathered in. You can't have obscenity being performed. That's illegal. So it's not so simple as to say, well, this is a public venue and we don't have any standard prohibiting this and therefore it's okay. There's more to the story. Now, I will say this. One of the things that I talked about when I talked with Pastor Johnson in person, and I said this on the air, is I always hate that Christians, historically conservatives, come against performances and art forms and music and movies that they haven't seen, that they haven't read. And that always offended me when I was not a Christian. That offends me still as a Christian. I think that you ought to know the thing before you call to cancel it. There are some things. You know, you don't have to watch every form of filth on the planet in order to know that it's filth. But there are some things that you really ought to watch and think deeply about. The example I always use is The Last Temptation of Christ, a movie that Christians boycotted and protested and made a big ruckus over in the late 80s, early 90s, somewhere in there, maybe 90. Anyway, doesn't matter. And I thought, as a non-Christian at the time, but raised as a, you know, Methodist, I thought the movie was very affirming of Christianity. I still think that. I think that the people who boycotted that movie never saw it and didn't think about it if they did and didn't consider the implications. And it made them look stupid. And I think most of the time when Christians, typically my people, conservative Christians who care deeply about the Bible, when they boycott something, it makes them look stupid and mean and counterproductive. And they wind up making it look like, we're the sort of theocrats and I dare say fascists that people claim we are. We want to control everybody's lives and we should be about the gospel and, you know, loving our neighbor. And how is this loving our neighbor? Well, James Johnson would say loving your neighbor is preventing them from engaging in disgusting things that harm their soul and harm the soul of the community. But also he says, look, this particular show is not just an ordinary run-of-the-mill women in high heels and fishnet stockings, men in high heels and fishnet stockings and exaggerated makeup. This is a really disgusting show. And I will tell you, this is a, I don't think anybody's up with kids at this time, but, you know, if you have them, this isn't the part to listen to, okay? I'll tell you, this is pretty explicit. I mean, this is a pastor going before city council, doing his best to convey to them the seriousness of the content in this show as he understands it. So we're kind of in amazing times, but here goes.
For the record, Drag Queen Christmas is more reprehensible than was portrayed on WEAR last week. This event is much more than just men prancing around with a little bit of makeup on their face. Please understand, Drag Queen Christmas is a blatantly sexual performance. According to a video footage available online, as a part of the production, a barely clothed man wearing a Christmas red G-string turns so that his backside is toward the crowd and he spreads open his already bare buttocks, pulling back his red G-string and offers his anus to the crowd. That's not art, nor is that freedom of expression. Actually, it's obscenity, and it's evil.
What a country. Now, I know the reason he brings this up is not just to create some incredibly audacious sound clip. he brings this up because he's trying to convey to city council, do you realize what's in this show, really? It's an 18-up show. Kids can't come. That's assuming that they don't get in some other way or don't get, you know, taken in by people who are lying about their age or purporting them to be 20, you know, 18 or whatever. But this would be genuinely illegal. It violates the Miller test. It's actual obscenity. It's illegal under local and state law. It's not just a drag show. And he's right. There are things you cannot do, at least my understanding. I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on the radio. you know, but there are certain things you cannot do legally, especially in a public venue, even an 18-up one. As you would know, if you go to these places, there are limits of what can be done. So is this particular show inside those boundaries or outside those boundaries? Well, weirdly, it's one of those things where you might have to actually wait for it to happen to find out. And it reminds me of the old, you remember when Broward County would send sheriffs to the, what was the name of the band? It was a rap band, as bad as they want to be. I can't remember the name of the offhand. Somebody's going to text it to me at 437-1620. They were a very famous act in the late 80s, early 90s. And they got in trouble in Broward County for performing what was considered to be lewd and disgusting, you know, content in their music. I'll think of it later and it'll be too late by then. Anyway, so.
Wait, was it Two Live Crew?
Yes, thank you. That's exactly right. It took me a second. Anyway, and that isn't, I mean, that's the question. Because he can't know in advance for sure whether this particular performance is going to violate those norms. But based on past video, it seems like it would. Do you prohibit the show based on what it did in the past, or do you prohibit the show based on what it's doing now? Would this require somebody to go to watch one of the other performances and observe it and see if it's going to violate Pensacola or Florida standards? They're not easy questions. But I'll say this. I had defended the city and defended the show's constitutional right to perform, but not up to and including the point that Pastor Johnson says. That is, again, in my opinion, that's a violation of several ordinances and or laws and would justify shutting down the show mid-happening, you know, people getting arrested. So is it going to include that or not? Well, that's the question. And should we be taking that risk? And is it a good thing to take that sort of risk? So these are, you know, this conversation is not over. And they're going to come back again, and we're going to keep talking about this a little bit because this has scandalized an entire segment of the community. It has brought forth a lot of conversation that we've been having about the First Amendment in other contexts, but I think it's a very interesting question. 437-1620, I'm Andrew McKay.
I'm still going for it, even with higher stroke risk from atrial fibrillation and a regular heartbeat not caused by a heart valve problem. Over a 3-year study, Eliquis apixaban tablets reduced stroke risk better than warfarin, and over 97% of Eliquis patients did not experience a stroke. A first stroke occurred in 2.9% of warfarin patients versus 2.3% of Eliquis patients.
Don't stop prescription Eliquis without asking your doctor. Stroke risk may increase. Eliquis can cause serious and potentially fatal bleeding. Don't take if you have an artificial heart valve, abnormal bleeding, or antiphospholipid syndrome. While taking, you may bruise more easily or bleed longer. A spinal injection increases blood clot risk, which may cause paralysis. Get medical help right away for unexpected bleeding or bruising, or back pain, tingling, numbness, muscle weakness, or incontinence. Aspirin products, NSAIDs, SSRIs, SNRIs, and blood thinners increase bleeding risk. Tell your doctor about planned medical or dental procedures. Learn more at Eliquis.com or call 1-855-ELIQUIS.
Join Jonathan Cook from Jonathan's Flooring and Construction Wednesday at 10 a.m. on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Jonathan will be sharing his years of expertise on flooring, including insight on materials, installation, and maintenance, plus lots of great advice on home and office remodeling, including the kitchen, bath, cabinets, and more on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Making it to work on time? No points. Holding the door? Still no points. Remembering trash day? You guessed it, no points. But with the Penair Rewards MasterCard, you can get 20,000 points and no balance transfer fees for opening a new card and doing your everyday shopping. Every swipe after? More points, more rewards, more reasons to swipe. Start earning today at penair.org/creditcards. 20,000 bonus points awarded to new rewards cardholders after the qualifying spend in the first 90 days, insured by NCUA.
Join the Great Southern Restaurant Group, home to the Fish House, Atlas Oyster House, Jackson's, Angelina's, and Five Sisters, Wednesday at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. They'll be discussing Atlas Beverage Class, Jazz at Jackson's, Fall and Winter Menus, Fall Harvest Dinner, A Great Southern Dinner, Thanksgiving, and Thanksgiving Grab and Go, all Wednesday at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel with Great Southern Restaurants.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, Pep Talk, mornings at 9 right after Pensacola Morning News with Andrew McKay on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
Guys, we got to come up with another plan. They got a tank.
Good morning, 5:30 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. David Wayne is in the newsroom with a headline or two for us. David?
Well, good morning. President Trump is sending troops into Portland.
Yay!
I lost my story. But troops are headed to Portland defending ICE facilities there from Antifa.
I think they're just going for, you know, coffee and microbrews myself.
It's a good reason.
Yeah.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. Authorities in Michigan working around the clock trying to find more victims of what the FBI is labeling targeted violence at the Church of Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints in Grand Blanc, Michigan. At least four people are dead, several others injured.
Hundreds of people were inside worshiping when police say the gunman rammed his car into the front doors. Authorities say he got out of the car and started shooting before officers arrived and exchanged fire with him, killing him. Police say the gunman deliberately set the church on fire. It was engulfed in flames for a couple of hours.
Fox's Madeline Rivera, police say the suspect is 40-year-old Thomas Jacob Sanford. Court date for Tyler Robinson, a man accused of assassinating Charlie Kirk. He's expected to appear virtually from the Utah County Jail. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 531 at News Radio 92.3. Right now we've got 68 degrees and mostly clear skies here in Pensacola. A 35-year-old Pensacola man was killed in a crash involving a semi-truck early on Sunday morning. Happened about 2:30 a.m. on County Road 196, entering Highway 29 in Escambia County. FHP says the man ran a stop sign and entered the path of a southbound semi-truck on 29. The driver of the pickup was pronounced dead at Sacred Heart Hospital in Pensacola. Now, Governor Ron DeSantis wants the state to cut ties with the American Bar Association. The governor writing on X yesterday that he supports ditching the ABA, but he does say it's up to the state Supreme Court to make that change. He said that Texas's Supreme Court just did something along those lines. Charlie Kirk could be honored in Pinellas County. Clearwater City Council member Ryan Cotton planning to introduce a resolution today to rename Court Street there as Charlie Kirk Way. He tells Tampa Bay 28 that honoring Kirk is a way to honor free speech, open and honest debate, and the courage to hear everybody equally. Meanwhile, a Broward County social studies teacher has been reassigned for comments allegedly made following Kirk's death. Well, a Pensacola activist that passed away last month will have a street named in his honor soon.
We will be honoring Reverend John Powell by naming Belmont Street between DeVillers and Roos for Reverend Powell.
Pensacola Mayor D. Sue Reeves from his Minute with the Mayor on social media last Friday. Of course, that announcement also made last week right here on News Radio 92.3. He says they've talked with Powell's family and the city believes it is a well-deserved honor for the Reverend. And friends describe Powell as a go-to person in the community. A portion of Belmont Street between DeVillers and Rouse will be designated in his honor at a ceremony on November 1st. Well, it is 5:34 here, News Radio 92.3. Right now, 68 degrees. We've got partly cloudy skies. And our next news is at 6 a.m. Breaking news anytime it happens. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Trib Live reports the Trump administration is considering imposing tariffs on foreign electronic devices based on the number of chips in each device as it seeks to drive companies to shift their manufacturing to the United States. According to the plan, the Commerce Department would impose a tariff on the imported product that is equal to a percentage of the estimated value of the chip content of the item. Vice President J.D. Vance said he is optimistic about the future of TikTok in the U.S. TikTok has long faced concerns about its data collection practices and parent company ByteDance's relationship with the Chinese government. About 58 million pounds of Tyson Foods corn dogs and other sausage on a stick products are being recalled across the U.S. because pieces of wood may be embedded in the batter, with several consumers reporting injuries to date. The recall covers select State Fair corn dogs on a stick and Jimmy Dean pancakes and sausage on a stick. Futures are moderately higher. On Friday, the Dow Industrials gained 299. That's Your Money Now.
As a business owner, you've got a lot on your plate. Managing staff, growing your business, training new hires, and more. With so much going on, you need Avalon. As an IRS-certified PEO, Avalon HR can help. From running your payrolls, remitting state and federal taxes, workers' compensation insurance, employee benefits, and our HR expertise. Avalon HR lets you focus on your core business while we handle the rest. Employing made easy. AvalonHR.com.
Tune in today as WSRE-TV's Bill Harrell, executive producer of Studio Amped, and Mary Riker, WSRE marketing director, will be on the Pensacola Expert Panel at 9 to discuss the upcoming Studio Amped concert series starting next week with the Pensacola Beach Songwriters Festival. It's going to be a fun-filled Pensacola Expert Panel show you don't want to miss this morning at 9.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620.
Want to score tickets to see Florida State games in Tallahassee? Just download our News Radio Pensacola app. Then tap the app for your chance to win tickets to FSU home games Monday through Friday from 5 a.m. to 5 p.m. Each day you enter brings you one step closer to being in the stands. The winner will be announced live at 5:15 p.m. on Pensacola Right Now with Chris and Austin. Download, then tap that app. The News Radio Pensacola app. And get ready to be in the stands for game day with News Radio 92.3.
I love it when they lose their voice.
Well, I was wondering.
That is finished, bro.
No.
You were wondering what?
I was wondering if you were watching that game because I was, and I was like, oh, no.
Oh, man. Illinois, last second, 41-yard field goal after they driven after South USC. I said South Carolina. Had driven the field for a touchdown in the prior possession. So, woohoo. Mile line, I ranked 23rd at the time. I haven't checked back with the standings, the rankings since then, so I'll have to go look that up while I'm playing this other clip. Meanwhile, you had LSU Tigers playing, I don't know, some team from Mississippi. I'm not quite
sure
who that was.
Excuse me, excuse me. What? Say my name. Say my name.
On fourth and three, it's right. He's wide open. He should just go down in bounds, and he does. Great call, Greg, and great call by Lane Kiffin and Charlie Weiss Jr.
Fourth and three with a minute and a half to go, and all Miss needed was just grab the just grab the first down, and they did, and then he just kind of laid down in bounds. It was It was the weirdest play ever, but it's the right play.
It was.
Let the clock run. Run out the clock. Run a couple of plays, you know, victory formation. That's it. Ole Miss defeats LSU, ranked number 4, Ole Miss number 13. 24-29.
Now we're number 4.
Oh,
I just thought I'd
wow.
Let
okay,
you know
I'm pulling it up right now. So let's
okay,
all right, fine.
Well,
so,
I already know.
Oh, I see that. Nicely done. So jumping up nine positions, undefeated, 5-0, passing over everybody, including Penn State, who lost to Oregon and only dropped to number 7 in the process. And Oregon now is number 2. Ohio State's number 1. Talk about Ohio State, but they won. the other game that I'm sure many of you were interested in was the Alabama-Georgia game. Georgia comes in ranked number 5. Alabama comes in ranked number 17. And late in the second quarter before the half, Alabama up 17-14.
First and goal without a timeout. A little urgency here.
What a gift.
Simpson on the move. He's going to keep it and score. Creative, efficient. And Simpson says, hush now. Alabama stretches the lead before halftime. Another 75-yard drive.
Creative, efficient, go Alabama. I felt like he was more of a cheerleader there. But, yeah, they stretched the lead to 24, and that was enough to win the game 24-17 eventually. Or was it 21? No, it's 24-21, excuse me, over Georgia eventually. But, you know, big win for the Tide and not so much for Georgia. So, yeah, you know, it was an okay weekend. Lots of different football going on. 4-3-7, say what?
No, that, I mean, yeah.
Right?
It was great. For college football.
Oh, I'm not talking
the
about
NFL.
The, you know, I haven't even watched
stay
this
up
game
late.
Yet. Oh, okay. So, tell me I'm wrong, okay? Having Green Bay and Dallas tie in double overtime at 40. And then, oh, instant classic. No, instant shame. What tie games are not football.
We were down like 14-2, like in the second quarter.
So yeah, it's just not like, a, I mean.
But then
but
all
the
action
game,
that happened.
Tie game. I mean, it was a back and forth. There was a lot of back and forth, and that's good. But, you know, tie games, not going in for that. War Eagle, Auburn wins. Who cares? I mean, I care, but, you know, and Auburn fans care, but, you know, not that big of a deal. Ooh, FSU, didn't they lose on Friday?
Yeah. Yeah.
Going to need you to go ahead and come in on Monday for that one. So, yeah, not so great. Anyway, that's your quick college recap over the weekend. 4-3-7, 16-20. What else do we have going on? I'm going to save that for later. I thought this was kind of some fascinating stories that are not like over the weekend stories, but I have not managed to get to them related to the military because I know a lot of you folks are driving into the base at this time of the morning. And so this is kind of stuff that a little bit more geared toward y'all, which is, of course, perfectly fine. Very interesting article at Defense one of my favorite websites, talking about what it really takes to replace existing assets with unmanned assets. And their question was a destroyer. I mean, destroyer is a very hefty piece of equipment with lots of people, you know. The question is, what if we took apart all of the mission elements of what a destroyer can do, other than being very expensive and having a lot of personnel on board, what would it take to replace that? You know, they're calling it the deconstructed DDG. You know, like you go to a restaurant and they do a deconstructed hamburger and there's like the bun over here and the burger over there and I don't know, cheese melted on a piece of air. I'm not sure how they do that exactly, but you know, deconstructed means pulled apart into its essential pieces. And so they're saying, you know, the hypothesis here, they call it the TF-66 hypothesis, which is, you know, what would it take to really replace the operational capability of a destroyer? And they think that some combination of 20 or so unmanned aerial vehicles could basically accomplish what a destroyer could do. I think 20? 20 doesn't seem like very many. I mean, but the cost would be like 1/30th of a destroyer. 20 drones replacing a destroyer at 1/30 of the cost, and of course, a much lower profile in terms of manpower being put at risk. The guy's name who was presented on this, who was this? I thought it was, the last name is Mattis, but it wasn't like General Mattis. Mattis says, I need to be able to show the return on investment of that. I need to be able to show the resilience of that system being able to perform, and I need to be able to show that it's okay to a threat that capability and then be able to quickly regenerate another one. That's part of the other advantages, quickness from development to in the field. It takes a long time to deploy a destroyer. It doesn't take very long to deploy some drones. If you just, hey, order me some more drones. And that comes down to really understanding those numbers and the data and having confidence that these are real capabilities and deliver real effects that we've rehearsed and proven in an actual battle space, you know, like we're seeing in Ukraine and Russia, where you have active opposition and electronic air, you know, electronic warfare going on and all of that. He says, let's see, we have 10 of our USVs that have pretty good range. They're slower speed, but they have good ability to carry a couple hundred pounds of a payload. So whether it be ammunition, food, work with the Polish Special Operations Forces and U.S. Army to put those boats, this is Navy assets, in the water and then essentially see, by the way, not all air, I said air, but also, you know, water-based. And then essentially see what it would be to take to get him through a barrier and have him go another beach where he might have been an isolated force looking to be sustained. You're thinking about South China Sea. You're thinking about warfare against the Chinese. This is where everybody's focused right now, is the future there. So anyway, it's just kind of interesting. He says we have many multi-domain ships, multi-mission ships. We don't necessarily have ships that can do effects everywhere all the time. Everything, the idea is, and how do I take a great capability like a destroyer, outsource maybe one mission set from that destroyer, maybe the maritime demand awareness, and to be able to characterize maintaining the persistence capabilities of that ship to missions in a flotilla of unmanned things that do a variety of different things, including aerial vehicles. So you see where the mindset is on developing us towards a less crewed, less manned, less expensive, more nimble, more adaptive. Think kind of not drone swarm in the air, but drone swarm on the sea. And, you know, if you put 15 or 20 unmanned ships out there, they do this mission. And then you batch 10 of those with five from here and five from there, and they do a different mission in a different scenario. You, again, kind of see where the future of at least United States warfare, at least we're kind of looking at that. 5:45 on News Radio 92.3. Meanwhile, Rangers are specifically testing out drones as anti-tank weapons because this is being done to effect on the battle space, right, in Ukraine. They're doing that very well. Drones are cheap to replace. The cost per kill is hugely elevated, especially when we have first-person view drones killing $5 to $6 million tanks. Master Sergeant Andrew Heater interviewed for Task and Purpose, another great website that I really appreciate. You know, and this is something where we're, you know, you're seeing units deploying with drones for different purposes. And, you know, a drone can be everything from a plane-sized drone to, you know, a little handheld thing that's no bigger than your computer or smaller. FPV drones that the regiment's been testing can carry anywhere from 5 to 10 pounds of explosives and fly more than 5 kilometers. You know, right now, what would you use against a tank? A javelin, basically, you know, pretty expensive, pretty hard to carry. You can't load a lot of them, you know, shoot once you're done. So, you know, looking at something that's cheap, replaceable, you know, have a handful of drones and, you know, a box of munitions. You see a lot of capabilities that are, well, the Ukrainians are proving very effective, and we're trying to learn how to do it like they did without using Chinese drones, which is, you know, one of the problems, right? So just a couple of notes from the kind of the future of naval and army action. There was also another good article out. This was from MassLive.com. They were talking about a 150-foot autonomous warship that kind of looks vaguely like a hovercraft. It's a $50 million that they're working on building. This is something being developed by private industry that they say, you know, they're trying to build by the end of the year. And they think that this could be the future, or at least one piece in the future, because everybody realizes there's a lot of money to be made in the future of a totally different looking Navy and Air Force and Army. And so they're, you know, this is the kind of thing they're trying. It's designed to have zero people from the base. The minute you put a sailor on board, your cost goes up because not just a safety factor, but you've got berthing, you've got a galley, you've got to have a gym, you've got to have water services. Like, you know, you got to put a hotel on top of the ship. So obviously building an uncrewed ship has all kinds of design advantages in addition to just the advantage of not having to put a personnel on it. John, I don't feel like I've adequately described this, but how would you describe that vessel?
Yeah, like a hovercraft looking.
Looks like a, you know, looks like almost like a cross between
one of those amphibious landing ships.
Yeah,
and
some kind of, I don't know, almost an old, like, personnel carrier that you might see, but designed for the water.
Right.
So anyway, just keep in mind, this is the kind of stuff that people are, you know, in the, you know, defense industry and in the military planning are thinking about. I'm not sure this is going to be coming up tomorrow with President Trump and Pete Hegseth and all the generals and admirals, but it's the stuff that's on my brain, especially because we train a lot of the personnel here. We train the pilots, right, who fly the helicopters. We train the pilots who fly the jets, both for the you know, Marines and the Air Force and the for the Marines and the Coast Guard and the Navy, and then, you know, obviously jet and propeller pilots for the Navy and the Marines. So anyway, just, you know, this is all part of the future. In fact, the number one question I ask whenever I talk to anybody of any, you know, significance in the Navy, I always ask this question. So how is the unmanned future, the uncrewed future, going to affect us in Pensacola and in, you know, NAS Whiting Field, the busiest airport in the world? Big question for our two-county economy, right, is how this is affecting us, or what will our role be in that? And the answer they always give me, I'll be honest, I always feel is a little bit of truth and a little bit of PR. Well, we see a future for, you know, manned aviation for the foreseeable future. Okay, fewer? You know, right? Because some is not zero, but some is not today either. And these are the questions I have. Anyway, 550 here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
The I-10 Wired TechNet CyberCoast Summit returns October 29th to Pensacola Beach. Presented by IT Gulf Coast and Blue Angels AFSEA Chapter. Get connected with top-level cybersecurity, AI, and emerging technology experts. The conference features a free career fair, prizes, and an amazing welcome reception on Pensacola Beach. Discounts available for students, military, and government employees. Visit itenwired.com for tickets.
Is your business, church organization, civic group, school, or other nonprofit organization having a fundraiser or other community event? Let News Radio 92.3 AM 1620 help you spread the word. Send us your information to be presented on our Here's What's Happening weekly announcements. We look forward to hearing from you. Submit your events at newsradio923.com.
Love electronics? Join the award-winning team at ADX Communications, home of Cat Country 98.7, News Radio 92.3, ESPN 1330, and Pensacola's Playlist. We're looking for an experienced electronics technician who can keep our stations running smooth, from the studio to the transmitter tower. Competitive pay, great benefits, and a fun, fast-paced team environment. Apply today at catcountry987.com. That's catcountry987.com. ADX is an equal opportunity employer.
News Radio 92.3 is proud to be a partner in the success of a lot of local businesses. We want your business to be part of this success story with our unique platform to showcase your powerful message. Every day, News Radio's Pensacola Expert Panel provides an opportunity unlike any other show. Hi, I'm Meg, host of the Pensacola Expert Panel. Let us help you share your message. Call Jeff Wayne to get you and your business part of the Pensacola Expert Panel. Call 850-262-6000.
Want to win tickets to Florida State home games? Download our News Radio Pensacola app, then tap that app. Tap that app to enter Monday through Friday on News Radio 92.3.
There is no escape. Don't make me destroy you.
A cold shoulder, a closing time. You begging me to stay till the sun rose.
Oh my God, John. Strange words, come on.
Yeah.
So John and I were talking about football on the break and how, you know, where Auburn is at and where what teams are at and all this stuff. And, you know, he's excited because Ole Miss is currently the top-ranked SEC team because they're undefeated.
Woo-hoo,
5-0,
place.
Right?
5-0. Yes.
But this next week you play Washington State, and we were I was asked, is it a Big Ten team? And you said you didn't think it was. You said you thought it was a Pac-12. So I looked it up. So, you know, the Big Ten is now like the Big 20, or I don't – I guess it is actually 20. I had it right, which is crazy. But – like Washington and Oregon joined the Big Ten, so they were formerly Pac-12. And I said I didn't think the Pac-12 existed anymore because I thought they had all transferred out. No, there are still Pac-12 teams. Washington State's one of them. Oregon State's the other.
So there's two?
There's two. The Pac-12 has two teams.
I don't know who's going to be that champion.
Beavers and Cougars fighting to the death. Nice, Cougar. 4-3-7-16-20. You know, what's sad about that, though, is like Oregon State and Washington State are in-state rivals for Oregon and Washington, mm-hmm. Long-standing rivalry. They're not even the same conference anymore. You know, so when the Beavers and the Ducks play, it's like, Anyway, David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David? This is the kind of high-quality audio entertainment that you get at 5:50 in the morning.
What did I just miss? I flipped over and heard you quacking.
Beavers and cougars and ducks. Right. Oh, my. Go on.
All right.
And
then.
Trojans. Used to be, anyway. USC, right?
Yeah.
Well,
true.
President Trump is meeting with Republican and Democrat congressional leaders today as the clock ticks forward towards a possible government shutdown. Lawmakers are considering a stopgap funding bill with House Speaker Mike Johnson supporting that.
No, which say it isn't so. A temporary measure is going to be a solution to yet another government shutdown crisis. No, yeah. It can't be.
Yeah, here we go again.
I'm so worked up. Go on.
Well, President Trump has now directed his administration to declassify federal records related to Amelia Earhart. Earhart and her navigator, Fred Noonan, disappeared over the Pacific in 1937. She was, of course, attempting to become the first woman to fly around the world.
Wait.
Ooh, I can't wait for that.
Declassified information around Amelia Earhart?
That's right.
That's right.
Did you know there was...
The Earhart files are coming out soon.
You didn't know that?
Oh, I didn't know.
Oh, I can't wait to read them as aviation enthusiast.
So you are a nerd thing about this. Okay, all right. Yeah. My brain stopped listening to the story when you said that the co-pilot's name was Noonan, because I'm on a Caddyshack now. Noonan, miss it. Anyway, go on. What else?
Let's see.
And yeah, I don't actually have that sound clip, so I feel very embarrassed about that.
Leonardo DiCaprio's new film, one battle after another, apparently dominated the box office over the weekend, Andrew, earned over $22 million in the U.S. and Canada and $48 million worldwide.
Say it right.
Say what right?
22
million.
Million. Too many movies. All right, David, thanks so much for the update. 5:55. Yes, I know. Everybody wants me to. 5:55 on News Radio 92.3. Oh, man. What else do you have going on? Oh, so I guess I'll say it this way. If you have kids in the car, maybe shut their ears for just a second. Americans aren't having enough sex. We're not making enough babies. Both. True. The kids aren't having sex anymore, which is good because they're not having the premarital sex. But the problem is that also they're not having the premarital sex, which means that they're not socializing. If you put enough teenagers and young adults together, what they do is... this.
Text each other.
Yes. Yeah. And then, eventually that leads to more people. Not to draw too fine a scientific line about it, but that's how this works. Well, we're not making enough people anymore. The manufacturing process is broken, because people are A, not having any, B, delaying, and in delaying wind up either not having any or having fewer, or having careers, which is delay, or having economic fears, which is delay. And so people are waiting, and then they're older when they have them. And then we, over the long haul, if a lot of people in the aggregate delay having children by, say, 5 or 10 years, that means that over, if 8 people make that decision, you've basically lost a whole person. I mean, this is a math problem, okay? If 8 women, if the average lifespan of a human is in the 70 to 80 range, okay? And 8 women collectively decide to delay childbirth by 10 years. Okay? The people they do eventually make, even if they make the same amount, came later. We lost 10 years of a person. And if 8 women do that, that's a whole person in net. Even if we have the same amount of people, which we're not having the same amount of people. We're having fewer babies and we're having them later. All of which is a collective bad news item for the economy and for the culture and, for things like Social Security and so forth. And so this is a problem. On the other hand, and, fair, I guess, give the other side their say, but the people who hate children, the people who believe in family planning, what is family planning but delay and deny? Those folks think that this is good because you're giving women power over reproduction, which is true. You're giving men power over reproduction, which is true. You're having children at a more desirable point. You're not having as many unwanted children, which is less good than having desired children and healthy, intact families, which is better, all of that. But I just thought it was fascinating that reading an interview with a woman who's really in favor of family planning and all of the delay-deny kind of effects, basically said, look, if you look at it from the lens of trying to get people to their fertility preferences, when you create a whole new term for culture, We'd like to achieve our fertility purposes here, which is how I think we should look at it. There are a lot of areas where you can improve and have more babies if you supported people. Immigrants, not only, this is another aspect of the interview, not only add to overall population growth, which is true. A lot of our population sustenance, I mean, we need workforce. One of the things about immigrants is they basically, for the most part, they come here already manufactured, you know, and you put them to work. I mean, a baby takes a lot of investment to bring them to, you know.
A lot.
You know, yeah. 18, 20, 25 Ooh. Years.
That's an investment, all right.
Time, money, lost potential, you know, all of the time that you spent on the kids is stuff you could have been doing otherwise. You know, and so that's all economic loss, so to speak, investment. If you bring a fully manufactured 22-year-old here from Mexico, somebody else paid that price.
I like it. Fully manufactured.
Fully manufactured human. Yeah. I mean, showroom ready, right? I mean, you know, they're ready to do work and be productive in the economy. Another dimension of the immigration problem, we keep deporting workers and we also have a declining birth rate. Not great. not a long-term success strategy for a culture.